Yes, so I heard about you talking about your Chinese student doing a study of the Ratnagotra Vibhaga and Asanga's commentary yes. that you came yes. across. In fact, I want to ask you, so you presented an almost a sort of evolution of your understanding of Buddha nature from yes. first understanding it as a way to avoid a nihilistic understanding of selflessness, and then yes. moving on to like avatara understanding, and now a more sort of absolutist understanding presented in the Ratnagotra Vibhaga. Do you think mm-hmm. that's also the kind of phase the Western understanding of Buddha nature as a whole has gone through, or is this more personal?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that most Western people, I think most Western scholars who study about it, I don't think they think of it as like the Buddha's presence in one, because I don't think they acknowledge, or, you know, in other words, I had read Ratnagotra Vibhaga long before that, but somehow it didn't click in my mind until I read that commentary. I had to edit it in detail because my Chinese student, you know, English was not his mother tongue and so on, and his translation into Chinese was stronger for him. And so I had to do a lot of editing on the English. And as the editor of the series, we published it. And in spending that time, it suddenly came alive. Maybe it's also my age, or I don't know. I don't really know. But I hadn't noticed it. And I don't think people do feel it that way, because I think that, you know, the cataphatic, as we say in English, you know, apophatic and cataphatic. And you know that kind of terminology from Oxford. You know, the cataphatic approach to Buddhism in general is not that, they don't get into it that much, I think, the contemporary people who study it. And they tend to think of Buddhism as sort of skepticism, and they think of Madhyamaka as kind of really almost like nihilistic and so on. It still is the cliche or stereotype, wrong stereotype about Mahayana Buddhism or Buddhism as a whole in the West, is that it's kind of world negating, you know, life rejecting, world negating, all these kind of terminology they have from Max Weber and others. And so they don't see that, and which is too bad, you know. But I think they will slowly, you know. Actually, you know, I'm tired of the, I'm changing the name of my institute to, before I die, I'm changing the name to Buddhological Studies, because I don't like Buddhist studies, because I was always uncomfortable with it, because it sounds like Buddhists are doing studies, or else it's the study of Buddhists. It isn't the study of Buddha. Because I think the Westerners don't want to admit that the Buddha has a different consciousness than themselves, you know. And I have a joke, actually, that I make recently to Western Buddhist studies people. I say, you guys know very well that Buddha couldn't have been enlightened. And then they look at me and they say, why do you say that? And I say, well, because Buddha didn't have a PhD from Oxford. So he couldn't have been enlightened. You know, you think of him as a pre-modern person, you know, from a underdeveloped culture. So how could he have been enlightened? You know, in other words, the prejudice of the modern people is like that, I'm afraid. You know? So therefore, Buddhology, I like it. That's not used much in America. But I like the word Buddhology, because then the logy part means the study of Buddha, not the study of Buddhists, but the study of Buddha. And that's what our primary study should be, I believe. You know, because Buddha is something different, you know, from ourselves.
I couldn't agree more with that, because even for a non-native English speaker and student, Buddhist studies sounds like studying Buddhists rather than Buddhism.
That's right.